Greetings, folks. Alex Mack from Monaco Books Weekly here. Have you caught an episode of the podcast? And did you actually enjoy an episode? Then become a supporter. For as little as 99 cents a month, your contribution goes a long way in helping the production of the show, as well as help generate content every week. And don't forget to catch us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Audible, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Radio Republic, and Stitcher. Monaco Books Weekly. Yes, I am. This is not a mirage. Hello, this. I am back. It's been quite a hiatus, if I might say so myself. It's been a lot. It's been a lot that's happened since I last recorded an episode for you guys. And yeah, so now I'm right back at it. You know, to kind of come here and kick it right back into high gear and get some content out here for you. So, yep, my name is Alex Mack, and thanks for checking me out once again for this week of Maniacal Books Weekly. This week, I got a bunch, since I've been away for so long, I got a bunch here that I can, you know, go through. We got some reviews here. We got our book review for the week will be Black Count by Tom Race. This might be the only nonfiction book review that I do on the channel, at least the only thing I could think of so far. And that's for a couple of reasons. You know, a historical fiction book, and it's something that I found just immensely fascinating and eye-opening, and I think you'll enjoy it too. And what else do I got here? Let's go through Nope, let's go through Smile, let's go through Barbarian. Oh man, so I'm, you know, usually when I first do this, I go through like a little spiel or whatever, you know, and I don't know, I kind of want to just bypass that since I've been away for so long, but I don't know, it's been a while, so, and a lot of stuff has happened. Recent thing that's right on the top of my brain is probably, yeah, it would probably be the passing of Jason David Frank. It was the Green Ranger from the Power Rangers. I'm not all that sure why it hit me a bit. It was a complete surprise. It just completely out of the blue. And I guess B would be, he was the one thing I actually liked about the Power Rangers. So, you know, and when this came out, when Power Rangers first came out, like that first generation that he was a part of, and I think he actually was still doing Power Ranger shows up until fairly recently. I want to say within like the last 5 or so years, because I remember watching a ton of Nickelodeon when my son was a bit younger, and seeing that whatever iteration of Power Rangers was out there now, like he was still on there, and I was like, whoa, wait, he's still you know, he's still doing this, huh? And I thought it was really cool, though. I was like, oh wow, he's still out here doing this, all right, that's pretty cool. And yeah, it's just, he was the one thing that I actually kind of liked about it. I couldn't stand it, even though I was the target demographic for the Power Rangers. It came out in 93, it looks like, and like I was 12 years old in 1993, which was, oh my god, like 30 years ago. Ugh, which actually kind of physically hurts me to say that was 30 years ago, my god. But yeah, I remember I was pretty much the target demographic, but I never got into it. I just found it really just goofy, kind of just really lame. I think I had, by that point, I had came across like anime, and I kind of most likely subconsciously knew that it was a kind of a knockoff of or aping the kind of anime culture, from in Japan, and it very much is. And I didn't know this until like years and years later, that they were actually taking clips and segments from this Japanese show, and Americanizing it, and making this whole other thing from it, and repackaging it and bringing it over here as the Power Rangers. But no, I think there was this thing, like, I kind of subconsciously knew it was just very much so, like, just biting off of, like, anime or, like, kind of Japanese culture. And so I thought it was, like, super lame. I hated it. Like, I honestly kind of detested it. And I think it was one of those things that my little sister was, like, super into. And so, as the big brother, I'm obligated to hate everything that my little sister's into. Especially when you're like 12 years old, that's kind of like the unwritten rule, right? But I do remember when the whole Green Ranger thing happened, and I'm not gonna lie, I was watching that, and then when he went on to transform into like the White Ranger, I remember that, and I was like, okay, that's something, that's all right. And also, I remember. I didn't catch on to this till like years and years later. It was pretty racially motivated with Power Rangers. Like, I remember, so the Yellow Ranger was an Asian woman. The Black Ranger was a black guy, of course. And then they're going to say, oh, the most powerful ranger of them all. The Master Ranger, if you will. Right? Is the White Ranger. He's the most powerful. Like, man, get out of here with that. It's really sad. There is a lot of, I kind of have my battles with mental health as well. And I probably can say that not a main component of the hiatus, but definitely plays a factor in that. It's just one of the things, like, oh, I haven't recorded in a week. Oh, my God, I really don't feel like it. Who cares? Like, who's going to listen to it? And then you go through this whole, like, Rolodex of things your brain is trying to tell you. And it's exhausting to kind of fight that off. But you eventually kind of go through the whole process and you find the motivation and the whatever again. But it's just, man, that was a blow. It kind of hit me really hard. And yeah, it was a shock, but yeah, man, rest in peace, Jason David Frank, man. You did give some enjoyment to kids out there, and I just hope that, I don't know, that sucks. That's really, really bad. What else happened? What else good happened? Yeah, I have about two or three things like that's terrible and just bad that happened, but that was that. But yeah, we just celebrated Thanksgiving, and happy belated Thanksgiving to everybody. It's a time of like food and family, and I enjoyed it this year once again. And yeah, that was kind of another reason for the hiatus. It was just doing all this stuff, and and the holidays is coming, but oh, I got some positive stuff to come out of the hiatus. Is I was a part of the reason I did kind of not record, or had a gap in the recording, was I'm finished actually publishing a client's book through through Max Books Publishing imprint, and that was a whole process. That's the very first one. So it's the very first time that I've had a client, give me a manuscript and just like, yeah, okay, publish this, and going through the whole process, going through the contracts, and signing the contracts is kind of crazy. I don't know what I'm doing. Like, this is the first time I'm doing it, and like, we signed the contracts wrong, and so I had to reach out to her and say, oh, we got to re-sign the contracts and do all that. But yeah, going through that process, signing a contract, working the story, because she's first time author, and she's doing a children's book, which is awesome, which is amazing. And just going through the manuscript, fine-tuning the story, you know, going through the edits with the editor, Kate Schaefer, and yeah, you just going through that whole process of fine-tuning the book, doing the formatting, and there's pictures in the book, because it's a children's book, and going, like, formatting pictures, and yeah, the whole process, it was a whole process, and it took a lot of attention of, you know, away from a lot of other stuff, because I am also kind of writing a book as well, and so, yeah, it was a lot, but it was a good process, it was a good learning process, and yeah, and I got through that, and I'm really excited about that, really happy about that, and I am trying to fast track this so we can get this out for the Christmas season. That was the goal, but that happened. Oh, and what else happened? I caught COVID. Yes, a big Rona found me. Big Rona actually found me. I was hiding. I was quarantining, hiding inside. I was wearing face masks. Didn't matter. She caught me anyway. And so, yeah, like, all that is happening. You know, I'm trying to process the client's book, you know, like, editing it, formatting it, you know, trying to get it out to market, and catching COVID. And that kind of ground everything to a halt as well, you know. And so, yeah, but in that, I was able to catch up on a lot of stuff, though. You know, like most of the movies that I'm going to review, I was able to watch while I was in quarantine. And so, yeah, it was it's a whole thing. it was a lot. And so, but that's over with. And now I am here and I am ready to get this show going. So, yeah, I mean, that's a spiel. That's about it. Let's go ahead and do this. As always, let me go through a quick break and about, like, 30 seconds or so, we will kick off the reviews.
Travel with me to a dark and isolated farm located deep in the heart of St. Mary's County, Maryland, where the only African-American farmer and his family are being tormented by some thing stalking around their property. Can they survive? Can they protect the farm that is their very livelihood? And can they do it with their sanity intact? Are you in the mood for dark, isolated, rural horror? Are books full of ghastly green goo and reanimated corpses your jam? Then check out Mulch, the eerie inaugural novella from Maniacal Books, available today on Amazon Kindle and mcsbooks.com.
Okay, and here we go. Let's go ahead and kick off the reviews. And as always, you can see the video version of these reviews going to our YouTube channel. That's Maniacal 2. Just search it up on YouTube and you'll see a picture of this frumpy, gruff, overworked looking face. And you know, stop by, watch some videos, subscribe to the channel, and click like, and stay tuned for more. All right, let's get back to the reviews. I'm so rusty at this. I'm so out of touch. All right, let's get back. Black Count, Glory, Revolution, Betrayal, and the Real Count of Monte Cristo by Tom Rice is one of my favorite books, and is one of my favorite non-fiction books, which is a rarity to me because I generally get bored with non-fiction. but in this instance, this is a pretty important book for me, especially because it highlights a lot of Black history that we just don't learn in school and still just will not learn in school. So this is one of those things I had to kind of like learn on my own, like, you know, outside of, you know, the confines of Western education. And It's infuriating as much as it is fascinating reading this book, because a lot of this is just hidden in plain sight, or a lot of what's publicly known about this person and his family's lineage is kind of not put out there, and it almost feels like it's on purpose, and it's kind of hurtful, and it's kind of infuriating. But okay, so why I feel that way is this. So this book is about a man called Thomas Alexandre Dumas, and if you're into books at all, or if you're into like literature in any way, Alexandre Dumas will kind of ring a bell. And that is because he is the author of a bunch of like pretty famous stories over time. But he's actually the author of The Three Musketeers and The Count of Monte Cristo, among other things. And I believe Man in the Iron Mask as well. Now, it was pretty shocking to me to find this out. Because the author of those stories, those very, very famous stories, is a black man. Who knew? Right? And that's the point. Why that isn't widely known, or why that isn't like said more, even to this day, I don't know. It's really kind of, it kind of pisses me off a bit. But it's also a lesson in you have to go out and seek the knowledge yourself. We can't rely on schools or institutions to tell us everything we need to know. Like they have an agenda. I don't know if the agenda is the right word, but they have agenda that they have to follow, or that they're trying to, you know, push or keep, you know. And so, yeah, and that's why books like this is just so fascinating to me, and why I have this ravenous kind of yearning to like read and learn more, and like gather up a bunch of more info for self, like for, you know, me, for like black people, black folk, because a lot of what we know about ourselves in like Western academic institutions is just slavery, basically. But we're so much more than slavery. Like, we existed before slavery, you know. So, but we, as far as like Western education, that's all we need to know, right? But okay, enough of that. So like, just to get back on track, Tom Rees, who's the author of this, did an amazing job on this. And he does like a ton of nonfiction. The book before this is called The Orientalist, I believe. I think it's about a Jewish man who fled and said he was like a Muslim, or converted to like converted to being a Muslim, and I don't know, did some other stuff out in the Middle East or something like that. But so it, like he writes very few and far in between, and because I think he just goes through painstaking details to research his subjects. Because even in that last book, The Orientalist, blah, even in the last book, The Orientalist, God, I cannot say that word, is also based on like an actual person. And so I am very appreciative of that guy, and like the work he puts into this, because this is an amazing story to tell, and it's an amazing history to unearth that I think everybody should know, especially black folk. All right, and so I have it here on my iPad, which I've had this book, oh my god, when did I first read this book? Oh, I want to say 2015, 2016-ish, maybe. I think when I first picked this up, and else I want to say about this. And but I don't have the physical copy of it. You know, when I get like a actual house or like, you know, a dwelling where I have room to like store books and things like that, then I'll probably actually get the physical copy. But as of right now, I don't have room. I'll probably just shove it under my desk right here or something. But again, so this goes through the lineage of Alexandre Dumas. And it also talks about his inspiration for the stories as well. Because, you know, a lot of his stories are very fun. Alexandre Dumas, I'm talking about, like, his stories are popular because they're very fun. And they're very fantastical. And they're like these swashbuckling adventures, you know, throughout Europe. And mostly about revenge or, you know, a vendetta. You know, that has to be, or a score that has to be settled, you know? And I think my favorite story of his will probably be The Count of Monte Cristo. And that's only because of I think the most recent film adaptation of the book is starring Jim Caviezel and Guy Pearce and Louis Guzman. I love that movie. It's one of my favorite movies personally, and I absolutely love it. it is one of the most gangster movies you could find. Like, and it really is. Like, Jim Caviezel plays Edmond Dantès. If you know the story, you kind of know that he's like, he was wrongly accused, and you know, he goes to this prison out in France, and like he finds a way to escape, and he finds like this immense fortune, and he has this list, right? He has this list of names, and he just, like, his get-back list. And he just goes through each name and just checking them off, right? I love that story. It's a true classic story. But you will find, so Alexandre Dumas, for those stories, they were all pretty much inspired by his dad. And his dad, who's kind of like the picture here, his dad was an ex-slave, and also he joined the military in France, and he came up to become like this very high-ranking general. I think he was the first black high-ranking general in like a Western or European army ever, you know. And I think Colin Powell is probably the only other one. I don't know. Like, this is the only one I know about since then, but yeah. So I can see how Alexandre Dumas got so much inspiration from his dad, because his dad's story is insane. His story is very crazy. But I mean, it all can start from, get my bookmark here. So from his grandfather, actually. And yeah, this, like, I have bookmarks all in this. Like, I have so many bookmarks in this. Okay, so now Alexandre Dumas' father's story starts in Saint-Domingue, which was back in the slavery days, Haiti. So, and now times Saint-Domingue is Haiti. It used to be a colony of France, and they used to have like sugar plantations there, apparently. And so Alexandre Dumas' father, who was like this rich nobleman who of course owned land and owned a plantation in Saint-Domingue, where I believe he was running from the law, or he was fleeing his family or something. I can't remember why. I'm not sure if the book goes into it, but you know, he kind of fled to Saint-Domingue to kind of like hide out from his family or something. And he ends up, you know, having a child, fathering a child with one of the slaves, of course. So at some point he returns back to France, right? And so in a passage in the book kind of goes into that. And so it says, Antoine Alexandre de la Halle, in the French sugar colony of Saint-Domingue. Antoine was a nobleman in hiding from his family and from the law, and he fathered a boy with a black slave. Later, Antoine would discard his alias and reclaim his real name and title, Alexandre Antoine Davy, the Marquis de la Pelletierie, and bring back his black son across the sea to live in pomp and luxury near Paris. But the boy, Alexandre Dumas' father, would reject his father's name along with his noble title. He would enlist in the French army at the lowest rank, taking the surname Dumas from his mother, his mother's maiden name, I take it, for his entitlement papers. And then once he'd risen by his merits to a higher rank, he would not even sign his name Alexandre, preferring the blunt, simple form, Alex Dumas. And I'm, okay, completely off note, off subject. I'm pretty sure that's how I got my name. I'm pretty sure it was Alexander or something at one point. But somewhere along the line, I think my grandfather might have, or his parents might even say, cut that off, just Alex. But yeah, so that's the thing. So, you know, Alexandre Dumas' grandfather came back to France, and for some reason, he took his illegitimate child, you know, back with him, and with the intent, it sounds like, to just have him live in high society, right? And I think if it was a thing too of like, you know, him parading around like, look, I have a black son, see, like, you don't have one of these, do you? Something like that. And that kind of whole attitude and thing still exists to this day, where, like, you know, rich people will adopt a black child or adopt a Vietnamese child or something as kind of like a status statement or something, you know what I mean? And yeah, and so very telling that Thomas Alexandre Dumas would drop his father's name and take up his mom's surname, like, when he become of age. And it says, like, he rejected, like, his dad's whole lifestyle. And I can imagine why. I mean, A, you're in, like, high society. You're the only black person in the miles around you, right? Or if you're not the only black person, you're only black, like, free person, or the only black person of, like, of status, or, like, can, like, go anywhere and, like, you know, do anything you wanted at that time. And, you know, I can just imagine, like, the stares, the conversations, the chittering in the background every time you walk in a room. Yeah, I could only imagine, like, his disdain for, like, this, like, his whole existence in high society France. Like, yeah, God, I can, but so even in there, like, the book even goes into talking about how even after joining the military, and it says, like, he joined at the lowest rank, but then he goes up into, like, being, like, one of the highest ranking members in the military. And I think even so much so that I've probably been on a battlefield with Napoleon. And this is kind of like in the history books. In France, too, there was a incident in here where somehow he was branded, Thomas Alexandre Dumas was branded a traitor, or some kind of incident happened where he got thrown into, like, a prison, like this very kind of, like, rough, almost like a penal colony like that we would have today. And for years, and, like, his name was dragged in the mud, and like he was kind of exiled, and he went off into this prison. And much like the Man in the Iron Mask, the Count of Monte Cristo, all those stories kind of have, like, that premise. Three Musketeers too, I believe, like, kind of have that premise of someone's locked away in a prison somewhere, like, unjustly. And it's, and in Three Musketeers' case, like, there's people that work to, like, break him out. But in the Count of Monte Cristo's case, like, you know, he somehow escapes it and, like, regains his name and all that. And all those stories are pretty much this guy's story. Like, that Alexandre Dumas is actually telling the story of his father in those tales. And those, and these are like really, really popular, timeless tales that, like, you know, everybody kind of knows these tales, especially Three Musketeers, like by heart almost. But what you don't know, because it's been so whitewashed, you don't know. And I think that's why my videos is freezing right now. It's a little too much truth. But what you don't know is these were all inspired by an ex-slave. Like, he was born into slavery, but I don't think he was a slave very long. Yeah, because in the book, they even talk about the revolutions in Saint-Domingue, where they kind of burnt that whole island kind of to the ground. Like, it was a slave revolt. And it's kind of what helped Haiti gain its independence. And even that still has ramifications to today's time, too. I think Haiti's one of the poorest countries in the world, and that's because France refuses to live up to what they like rightfully should be doing to offer assistance to Haiti. And so Haiti still poorest countries in the world. And, you know, they have natural disasters that kind of ravage them. And since they're not very equipped to handle day-to-day life very well, things like that just absolutely rock that country to the core. And once again, France refuses to help in any way. It's kind of truly despicable. But anyway, enough of my critique on colonialism. I can go all day on that as well. Yeah, it's a very, really good tale. Really fascinating. One of the most fascinating and gripping reads I've had in a nonfiction ever, you know. And yeah, I think this is very much worth checking out. Yeah, it's very well written. It goes into like painstaking details. He even kind of in here writes about him like doing the research and how difficult it is like getting like the research on Alexandre Dumas' father and his grandfather, which is pretty bizarre seeing how famous like that family is, because he is rich. Like, he comes from a rich family. And so, like, and he even kind of goes into how you know, the researchers he's talking to in France, they hesitate. They like hesitate a lot, you know, trying to divulge like a lot of info on like the Dumas family. And so, like, I love that about that. I love not only like getting the history, but he also like splices in the behind the scenes in this as well. And it's like a documentary in book form. It's really good, really fascinating. And he did a awesome job like putting this whole thing together. So yes, I highly recommend checking this book out. You know, you learn so much about Thomas Alexandre Dumas. Yeah, they talk about his just prowess on the battlefield as well. Like, they talk about how he fought off Austrian cavalry squadron kind of like by himself, and kind of like came out totally unhurt, like not a mark or anything on him. He like fought a whole like the way I'm pretty sure it's like very heavily romanticized, right? But like the way they make it sound like he fought off a whole battalion like by himself, you know, and just nothing, no mark, no nothing, just like, yeah, all right, come on, let's go, it's another day, what y'all looking at? Yeah, so like he was so high up ranking in the army that he took Napoleon's place apparently in one of the battles that they were fighting, the Italian campaign, I believe it was. And that's like, that's unheard of, because, you know, Napoleon's like this larger than life historical historical figure. And I know it's, you know, pun intended, I guess, but because he's a little guy apparently, but still, like, that's kind of unheard of as like a black soldier who's like leading the entire country, an entire European country back in like the 1800s, you know. Yeah, and this is the actual picture of Alexandre Dumas, and as you can clearly see, yeah, that's a brother. that is a brother. Like, he is clearly like a mixed what's the PC term for that? An interracial man there, but you know, a lot of pictures you'll find of him too is very like it's very lightened, and like his features are very kind of like painted in a way that's not like it's not like this. It's not like this at all. You know, and to find like an actual picture of him, I had to jump through so many hoops. This came from the National Portrait Gallery website, and they would not let me, they wouldn't even let me like open it in a new tab. I had to like register for it and like, you know, put an email and a freaking address in there and activate my account. You know, I was just like, what is happening to get like a true picture of what this man looked like, what this author of these like famous stories looked like. I had to jump through so many hoops. It's really infuriating. That like it is such an attempt to keep like true history, like true Black history. This is my opinion. This is what I feel. But it feels like it's such an attempt to keep true Black history. Like it's just put as many barriers or in the way as they can, because the internet is kind of like the great equalizer, right? And so whatever we can to get like our true history out, like, you know, but just in the way, it's really annoying, really infuriating. But all in all, I love this book. This is a 5 out of 5 for me. It's a go ahead and pick it up, and yeah, you know, learn just a bit more about like our history and what we have offered into like the world, into like greater culture. And yeah, I say, yeah, love this book. Really eye-opening. Is the 2022 horror thriller starring Kiki Palmer, Daniel Kaluuya, Steven Yeun, and Brandon Perea. And it is also directed by Jordan Peele. This movie. I don't know how to feel about this movie. It's a Jordan Peele movie, so it's beautifully shot. It's masterfully directed. Like he is, you know, it's movies like this that make you kind of appreciate him as an artist, like as a director, because he is directing the hell out of his movies. Like I guess the way I feel very similar to this movie as I feel about Us is that he's writing a novel with film almost. He's crafting like a work with like the camera lens that not too many people, the show they want to do, but I don't think a lot of people are able to do. With that said, it's so like some things can be so obtuse and so just kind of like in its own vibe that it throws me off. Like I'm just not into it. This kind of comes very close to being that type of movie for me. And there's nothing like, it's again, it's beautifully shot. Like that everybody's doing their thing in this. Kiki Palmer's doing her thing. Daniel Kaluuya is being, I don't know, like Daniel Kaluuya, he's trying something different here. He's this very kind of introverted, very low key, a very toned down performance from him. And like, I think he nails it. But it's not kind of what I want out of a performance or out of a Daniel Kaluuya performance. He's such a big character actor, just very kind of gregarious personality, just naturally. And I give him props for his acting in this movie, right? But I don't know if that's the kind of thing I want from Daniel Kaluuya, like, moving forward. Like, he has such a strong presence on film that, like, no, I need more charisma. I want more, like, out of him in a performance. But Kiki Palmer, and, like, he's playing opposite Kiki Palmer, who's playing his sister. She's playing Kiki Palmer, from what I could tell in this movie. You know, she is, like, very much playing herself. She's out there. She's loud. She's, you know, very personal, you know, in this movie. But and again, Steven Yeun is playing kind of like this like a little bit part. He's playing this kind of like side character. But he kind of fills in a lot of the backstory or a lot of like what is happening in here. I like the movie, but it's not my favorite. And again, it's critically, this movie is all over the place. Some people say it's the worst movie he's done. Some people say it's the greatest thing he's ever done. I'm kind of in the middle. I'm kind of like, I can see both sides of that argument. I mean, I like to think of this as like a Jaws with a space alien in it. It kind of has that tone to it. But at the same time, Jaws had to pay. There's a payoff in this movie too, but or maybe it's because it's Alien and there's so much left to be explained or left to interpretation with this. Jaws is a shark. We know what a shark is. There's not a lot of thought that goes in that. Like, any ordinary day at the beach could be like your worst day ever because like a great white shark sees you and just thinks, yeah, I'm going to eat that person swimming right now. And yeah, we get that. We can connect with that. However, this space alien, I don't know if it's a spoiler to say like it's what it is still at this point, but there's a lot, and with the space alien being this also this critique of Hollywood as well. Like I get that. I think he's been in interviews and stuff talking about spectacle and, you know, the alien is supposed to be like this stand-in for spectacle, or because like the opening of the thing looks very much like a cell phone camera to me, and I made that correlation pretty early on. Like, I think I know what. And you can't look at it. If you look at it, then it got you. And if you stare into the abyss, you know, the abyss will come and swallow you up. It's allegory for fame, it's an allegory for Hollywood, it's an allegory for, like, you know, going viral, all that stuff. Okay, right, I got it. But why, I don't know, like, it seems very detached, like, from reasoning, and just, I don't know, I didn't get, I got it, but I didn't, I'm like, okay, where is it, why is it, where did it come from, like, what is, and it can pretend to be a cloud, too, like, huh? You know, I there's a lot of it that's just like, I guess, left up to your interpretation. Okay, I guess. But one of the things that I think Jordan Peele is very much like, I think he's shown in this film, he's shown he's a mastery of, is sound design. And how the sound design like kind of interplays with the visuals as well, because I like to think this movie is much scarier in like the sound scope than it is like kind of like on film, and he's a master at like drawing tension in all of his movies. He has that, like, he can play tension like a fiddle almost, like he's a master at doing that. But that coupled with the sound design in this too, I really enjoyed it. Because, like, there's this sections in this, like, when you hear, like, you'll hear a weird sound. Like, so when Keith David, who had a part in this, like, he kind of, like, has a death scene very early in the movie that kind of, like, kind of kicks everything off. And you hear this weird kind of sound. You don't really understand what you're hearing, but you know it sounds weird. It sounds very alien. Or is it? Like, what was that? And that happens constantly throughout in the movie. And there's these shrieks and these screams. And it's not until, like, the very end you figure out, oh, that's what that was when I was hearing it. And that's why it sounds very, because it's like a, at first you think it's like a alien cry or something. But then you realize, no, it's something completely different. That's why it sounds like it's like a scream of pain or something like that. You know, you're like, oh, that's what that was. And that's like his mastery of film and storytelling is like it's 100% on point with this. But then the story is just all over the place, right? Like, and he has this, I guess he is trying to put this idea of a bad miracle, which in itself is an oxymoron. Like, there's no such thing as a bad miracle. You know what I mean? And he's trying to say something that's so random and weird that happens that, I don't know, you can say distracts from something terrible that's happening there, or like a silver lining to like a tragedy or something, right? I think that's what he's going at. But to me, he kind of missed the mark on that. Into things that just make no sense, like the shoe that's just standing straight up. I'm like, okay. But I guess he's saying, like, it draw attention away from him. So from the kid. Well, I'm going into spoiler territory. I don't know if you could talk about this movie without going into spoilers. But anyway, I love this movie. At the same time, it's just like, I don't know. I give it a 3. I think I give it a 3 out of 5. Barbarian is a 2022 horror movie starring Bill Skarsgård, Justin Long, and Georgina Campbell. Okay, so this is one of the movies that I saw during quarantine, and it kind of made quarantine not suck so much, actually. I had a ton of fun watching this movie. And also, it kind of frustrated me. It's honestly, equal measure, I had tons of fun with it, and it did frustrate the hell out of me. Okay, so what is this about? All right, so there is an Airbnb in some hood in Detroit that some young lady decides to stay in because she has an interview in downtown Detroit or something. And so she's coming from DC. She travels over to Detroit to do this interview. But when she gets to the Airbnb, she finds out the key in the key slot, or the little kind of like key holder, is missing. And she's trying to contact the person who put the Airbnb listing up, but she can't find him. But comes to find out that someone already is staying in the Airbnb. And so she has this decision to make. Do I stay here? Do I trust this creepy guy? Or I don't know, what do I do? And so, you know, she ends up staying at the Airbnb. Yeah, and so then Justin Long kind of comes into play, and yes, really weird and creepy stuff happens from there. What I like about this one, from the jump, it's a pretty tense movie. Like, right off the bat, mainly because one of the first people you see is Pennywise. Yeah, Bill Skarsgård, he's one of the first people you see, like in the trailer. And so they do have this kind of like this really disorienting thing they go for in the movie that I think they do really well, where it's just kind of like it throws you off balance because you're like, well, do I trust it? I don't know what's happening. And, you know, having Bill Skarsgård as one of the first people that you come in contact with, you know, really, really kind of helps throw you off, you know, really kind of helps you get off balance from the jump on in this movie, which is really genius to me. I think it's a really genius move that they pulled in this. And, you know, look at him. Look at Skarsgård trying to look all innocent, you know, like, you ain't innocent. I know who you is. You're turning to Pennywise at any moment. Yes, and then, so, like, they kind of really throw you off in this movie in other ways, too, because they'll, like, you'll be in one thing or one part of the story that's happening, and then they'll just abruptly just kind of cut and move on to, like, a totally other kind of scene and a whole totally other characters. And, now the first time that happens, we kind of go over into, like, Justin Long's part of the story, and it's really great seeing Justin Long in stuff again. Like, I haven't seen him in anything in way too long. Like, just seeing him on screen just made me realize how much I missed seeing Justin Long in stuff, you know. And yeah, it's about time too. And he kind of did a really good role in this too. Like, for the first time in a long time, he's not like the lovable loser character in movies that he's been in, like, pretty much everything else I've seen him in. Like, he's kind of like a douche. He's a real douchebag in this. But, and it's really fun. So I think for a lot of people, before, you know, Michael Cera was the lovable loser in, like, a lot of, like, movies, it was Justin Long, right? So seeing him kind of subvert that archetype and, like, him playing this really kind of really very privileged white male in this, who is kind of going through a Me Too moment, like he's on the bad end of a Me Too moment in the movie, was kind of fascinating just to see, like, what would that be like be on the receiving end of that. And, you know, just to see, kind of see him, like, do a completely different role that I'm used to seeing him do. It was fun. I really enjoyed that. All right, so yeah, I probably forgot to mention the director's name is Zach Krieger, who is, come to find out, he's from Arlington, Virginia, apparently, which is like, okay, yeah. Anybody from the DMV, I'm automatically a fan of. And he did an excellent job in this movie. Like, you know, the way he kind of did these narrative jumps, we just jumped to a whole nother kind of like story, a whole nother scene, I really enjoyed it. It was very disorienting, and he did it like right at the right moment where you kind of needed a breather, you know, in the movie. Like, right, it was perfectly timed, like, you know, right when, like, things were getting, like, totally crazy, you just jump to, like, this other kind of like story. And, like, I was like, and it really does kind of help the story go, like, what? Now what? Yeah, and another thing about the Justin Long character is, you know, he goes from this guy who I guess you could say was kind of like a sexual predator in a way, you know, because he has some allegations, like, you know, levied against him. And, you know, again, he's going through his Me Too movement. But then, like, he comes in contact with this lady creature. I don't know how you describe it, mother kind of creature that kind of gets the, now he is like, he's the recipient of, like, you know, a woman he can't, who is like way stronger or, you know, way more of monstrous than he can handle. And so now he's the victim, you know, they kind of like flip that script on him. You know, I kind of caught that in the movie too. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, speaking of that mother creature thing, that was, yeah, she was pretty gnarly. Yeah, she was pretty gross and disturbing. Like, you know, thinking of one of those like really run down like Detroit houses, you know, if, I remember years ago they was like, yeah, you can buy a house in Detroit for like $5, and you look at the house, it's just run down, just shack, you know. It was like, oh yeah, great, thanks. But yeah, I kind of imagine seeing something like her living in the basement of one of those houses. I could totally see that. I could buy that. And one thing I thought was insanely hilarious. So, you know, Justin Long is trying to flip one of those houses. And so you find a really decrepit, creepy looking sex dungeon in the corner of your basement that leads down into like some kind of like crazy catacombs. And what's the first thing he do? Grab some tape measure to see how much square footage he can add to the listing. You know, it's just like, that is just the worst. Yeah. So what I don't like about the movie was, honestly, it was just the decisions. Like I said earlier, that there's some of the decisions that was being made in this movie was just, it took me out. It kind of took me out of the movie, because I'm like, nobody would stay there. Like, there's a shot where, was it Georgina? Georgina's character first gets to the Airbnb house, and like she takes a second to kind of like look around at the neighborhood, and there's like abandoned cars, abandoned destroyed cars, abandoned houses. And I was like, nobody would. Anybody in their right mind would get in, especially if you can't get in the house anyway. But then it's like, wait, I'm the only like standing house in this block right here, and I'm gonna stay a night here. They're like, nobody in their right mind would do that. Like, it instantly took me out of the movie, because it's like, come on, you know. And she would not take a hint. Like, when she went to the interview, and the lady, and she was telling the lady where she was staying, and the lady's like, you staying there? Like, wait, there's no Airbnbs in that part of Detroit. Are you sure you're staying in the right place? And she didn't take the hint. Like, I would have immediately took the hint and be like, oh, you know what? Now that you mention it, it's a little rough over there. Yeah, I think you might have a point, you know. No, she don't take the hint. And plus, I think Bill Skarsgård plays his role where he's trying to be charming or whatever, you know, and I think it kind of like got in her head too, you know. But still, it's just like, and Bill Skarsgård's character, he did like the one thing that white people in horror movies always do, where like, okay, you find the weird sex dungeon in the basement. Well, let's check it out. Let's go check it out. Let's see what's down there. It's just like, man, no. Yeah, you go down there and check it out. I'm out. I'm out, bro. Like, you do that. I'm gonna be in the car. I'm gonna give you like 15 minutes, dog. If you ain't out, I'm out. I'll send help. All in all, love this movie. Really fun movie. I am really loving the renaissance that horror is having right now. There's so many like really good horror movies that's coming out, like one after another after another after another, and this year alone, but like the last couple of years, last like year or two, it's been like some really good horror. Actually, no, I'd say the last like 4 or 5 years, it's been like some really, really good horror movies coming out. And yeah, this is another one. I 4 out of 5. I really enjoyed it, really loved it. It's just like, come on, man, nobody would stay in that house. Like, seriously. But yeah, Barbarian, 4 out of 5. By the way, why is this called Barbarian? And that is it for another edition of Maniacal Books Weekly. I want to thank everybody for checking me out and sticking with me for this long. That I sincerely and genuinely appreciate each and every one of you who do that. Don't forget to rate and review the podcast on whatever platform you're checking me out on. And if you actually like what you hear, then try to be a supporter. For as little as 99 cents a month, your contributions will go a long way as to helping keep up with the production of the show, and as well as generating some content for it, and to keep the quality going, you know. And yeah, thanks everybody once again, and I will see you guys next time. Thanks.